Hi everyone, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for inviting me to come down. It's been 3 years since I've been here, so it's really nice to come down again. I have a question for you. My question is as follows. We all know Adam and Chava have 3 sons, right? We all know Noah has 3 sons. We all know Abraham has 8 sons from his 3 wives by the end of the story. We know Yitzhak has 2 sons. We know Yaakov has 12 sons from his 4 wives. And finally, we hear about 1 daughter named Dinah. In all the generations between Adam and Noah to Abraham, we've lists and lists of sons. So here's my question to you. Is this even statistically possible? Is it possible that in all of these generations, the only daughter that is born is 1 to Yaakov? Does that make any sense? Is it possible that Adam had no daughters, Avram had no daughters, Yitzhak had no daughters, Yaakov finally has a daughter, but nobody else has daughters? Besides trying to understand how all the men seem to get married, if there are no women to marry, which is a slight problem, you just have to try to understand, is that even a possibility at all? And I think the answer is obviously that's not a possibility. So we got to look a little bit closer when it comes to the discussion of sisters or daughters in the Torah. If you look at source number 1 with me, if you read a little bit closer, we see that Adam certainly had daughters. When we're learning about Adam, Vayu, Yimei Adam, Acharei Holido et Sheit, Shmona Meot Shana, Vayoled Banim Ubanot. Adam, after having Sheit, which is all we care about because he leads us to the Jewish nation, it tells us he lives till 800 and he has sons and daughters. There are daughters that are born to Adam. We just don't hear about them. We don't hear names. We don't hear about their births. But we certainly know that they have daughters. And once you see this one phrase, you realize that the phrase Vayoled Banim Ubanot is written 9 times between the generations of Adam to Noah and 8 times between the generations of Shem to Abraham. So certainly daughters are being born. We're just not hearing about them at all. But if we search a little bit more, we see that maybe we can find a few more. Number 1, the Midrash struggles with this and tries to add in some daughters here. So if you look at source number 2, the Avram Zaken ba bayamim vashem barach at Avram bakol. Avram's very old and God blesses him with everything. The question that comes up here is, what did that come to add? What do you mean bakol? What do you mean God blessed him with everything? Simply, you could just read the pshat of the pasuk, which is at the end of his life, though he went through a lot of time of suffering, now he's good. Now he has everything. Now he's satisfied. But the Gemara comes and tells us, source 2, Vashem beirach et Avram bakol. Ma bakol, what is this bakol that Avram is blessed with? Rabbi Meir omer shelo haitalo bat. A little bit insulting. Rabbi Meir says he has everything. Why? Because he doesn't have daughters. He doesn't have the stress of having daughters. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda omer the opposite. Rabbi Yehuda says shehaitalo bat. He had everything. Why? Because he had 8 sons, but now he finally had a daughter. Acherim amrim, others say bat haitalo la Avram ubachol shema. Maybe you can even say her name is even listed here. Her name is Bakol. Hashem blessed Avram with a daughter named Bakol. So even though we do not see in the Psukim Avram having a daughter, it is possible to argue that maybe he did through the eyes of Chazal, and maybe even her name was Bakol. Yaakov is a little bit easier to see more daughters than just Dinah. If you look at source 3 with me, this is when Yaakov thinks that Yosef is dead, and he's crying and he's crying and he's mourning and he's mourning. Vayakumu kol banav v'chol binotav l'nachamo. His sons and all of his daughters, and note that that's written in plural, came to comfort him, and he refused to be comforted. So the question here is, what's v'chol binotav? Look at Bereishis Rabbah with me. Vayakumu kol banav v'chol binotav. Rabbi Yehuda, same view again. Amar la'achiyotehem, to their sisters. Nasu ha'shvatim, and that's how we know that the shvatim had other sisters that they could all marry. Now realize, in the world of pshat, you can also argue a second idea, which is found in this midrash, which is, these are not daughters, but these are daughters in law, and therefore, since the sons married other women, the daughters in law came to comfort Yaakov. But it is possible, by looking through the Psukim, that we see hints to the fact that daughters are certainly born in those generations. The Pasuk says it outright. It's possible Avram had a daughter, and it's possible even that Yaakov had more daughters than Justina. If that's true, then when is it that we hear about a daughter or a sister? When is it that we hear their name? When is it we hear something about them? And what becomes very obvious to us, and it becomes even true about men in Torah as well, because if you look back at that pasuk about Adam, he had sons and daughters. Sons, they're not listed either. So really, when it comes to the beginning times in Bereishit, we're listing the people who are important, and then we're listing sons that kind of take us from generation to generation. But the excess people, even the men that don't fit that line of taking us to Abraham and to Am Yisrael, their names don't get listed either. And therefore, the only women that are going to be listed in Torah are the women who are significant, the women who give some sort of role. So what I would like to do with you today is look through Torah in terms of sisters. Which sisters seem to be mentioned? And what's always interesting by a sister who is mentioned, it's normally going to mean that she has some significance, but there's going to be a significance to why she is attached to her brother. It's normal in Torah, whenever you list someone's name, to bring them back or associate them with their parents. But why do we specifically, in these cases, associate this woman with her brother? What's the significance of her? And what's the significance of her brother? And that will take us to a discussion of Miriam. But before we can get to Miriam and see how unique she is, I want to show you how few there are, but who they are, and what it means to us to have these women listed. The first sister that we see in source number 4 is one that you kind of skip over because it's in a list of names and you wouldn't even notice it necessarily. But when we're talking about the children of Lamech, it tells us, if you look at source 4, that there's a bunch of children born. V'achot Tuval Kayin Na'ama. And the sister of Tuval Kayin by the name of Na'ama. Now Tuval Kayin, we know, is involved in the killing of Kayin. Him and his father together are hunting, and he's the one who tells his father where to shoot. And therefore, this is someone who has some significance. But why do I care about Na'ama? And you can search through the psukim, and there is not a single story about her. We know nothing absolutely about her in any sort of way, which is when Chazal gets troubled. Because if I have tons of women listed, then I don't care to find a significance for each one. But when I only have one in a generation upon generation where women are born, and I hear about none of them, she must be significant. And this is the source for the very famous Chazal, and what our children normally come home with from school as a fact, not even knowing where it comes from. Rashi, Na'ama hi ishto shel Noah. She must have married Noah. Because the assumption here is, she must have been important. We don't know why, we don't know what she did, so the only thing we can come up with is we know Noah had a wife, because it says he has a wife. But it does not tell us her name. The generations are a little bit difficult. She would be a lot older than Noah, but certainly it's a possibility. And therefore Chazal says, I can't have a sister being listed without some sort of significance to understanding why she's in the psukim. She must be Noah's wife. The next sister that we jump to in Torah is one that we know, and she makes a ton of sense. Source 5, we hear about Achot Lavan, and who, of course, are we referring to? The sister of Lavan, and that would, of course, be Rivka. Rivka herself, we know, is significant. She's the one who comes out and feeds the camels of the servants of Abraham. She is the one who ends up marrying Yitzchak and becomes one of our imahot, one of our mothers. However, at the end of the day, we also understand why she's associated with her brother, because her brother Lavan is someone who is the father of Rachel and Leah, who end up marrying Yaakov. He's significant within himself, and therefore it makes sense she is mentioned, but not only she is mentioned, but her brother as well. The next famous sister we have, source 6, is Dina, of course. Dina is listed as the only daughter we know of Yaakov, though we already said it may be he had more daughters, we just don't hear about them. But the reason why we hear about Dina is because she's extremely significant, because there is a story in Perek Lama Dalet where she is captured and she is raped by Prince Shechem, and that ends up that her brothers Shimon and Levi kill out all the men of Shechem, and this becomes a very big, I would say, historical event that is very noteworthy, and therefore important for us to know not only that Dina exists, but that she is the sister, Achotam it calls her, of Shimon and Levi, which is why they act in that way. They want to take revenge for someone doing something bad to their sister. But then we move on to someone that becomes a little more unusual to hear about. I know why I hear about Rivka, I know why I hear about Dina, but then comes source 7, I hear about one random sister when I'm listing the children of Asher. When we are going through all the tribes, we don't hear about any women at all, and then comes Asher, and it tells us he has a bunch of sons, V'yisham, source 7, V'yishvi, Uberia, and Serach Achotam. They have a sister named Serach. Again, all of the Mefarshim and the Midrashim go crazy, which is, why do I hear about this one random woman in this entire list, one sister? Why does she matter? So Chazal tried to attribute a lot of stories to her. This Serach gets a lot of credit, and I gave you a bunch. The most famous here is source number 8, and there's a bunch of versions about this, but the general story is they want to tell Yaakov that Yosef is still alive, and they don't know how to tell him without giving him a heart attack, so they send in the sister. They send in somebody who would say it in a more gentle way. The Midrash I gave you, source 8, where I bolded, Amru l'Serach bat Asher l'chi amri l'avinu Yaakov she Yosef kayam. They say to their sister, Serach, go tell our father Yaakov that Yosef is alive, v'hu b'mitzrayim, and he's in Mitzrayim, and she goes and she tells him, whether it's by, she's saying it very quietly, which is what this Midrash says, or other Midrashim, and she plays some sort of music to him and sings it to him. Different versions of the same Midrash, but it's Serach who tells Yaakov, and that's why she's of significance. But if you look, we have a few more stories. In source number 9, the Mechilta et de Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai asks, how did Minayin Haye Yodea Moshe Rabbeinu Heichan Yosef Kavor? You ever thought about that? How did Moshe know so many generations later where Yosef was buried? We had promised Yosef before he died, we'll take your bones out of Mitzrayim. How did Moshe know where to look? Simple answer? It's Moshe. Simple answer?
Hashem told him.
Very simple, right? We don't have that nevuah, but we know God spoke to Moshe all the time. Very simple. God, please tell me where Yosef is buried. No problem. Comes the Midrash. Who tells him? Amru Serach bat Asher. It's Serach. Serach told him she's still alive, and Serach tells him. According to the Midrash, she lives for like forever or a very, very long time. Because in source number 10, the Radak quotes another Midrash, which is a story by David HaMelech. I mean, we are really flying in generations here. Story by David HaMelech. There's a man by the name of Sheva ben Bichri. And Sheva ben Bichri tries to make a rebellion against David during the time that David is being overthrown by his own son, Avshalom, which is a very tragic story. And at some point, Yoav, which is his general, tries to go chase after Sheva to kill him, to kill Sheva ben Bichri. And when he comes to the town, Sheva ben Bichri is hiding. They surround the town, and they're going to kill the entire town. And a woman, it tells us in the Psukim, says to Yoav, what do you want? Why are you coming to kill out the whole town? And he says, I don't want to kill your town. Just give me the head of Sheva ben Bichri. And she says, hold on 1 minute, and then comes back with the head of Sheva ben Bichri. Says Radak, quoting a Midrash source 10, Midrash mi haita ha'isha zot, who was this woman? Serach ben Asher, here she is again. Source 11, Masachta Ketanev, says as follows, Shiva nechnesu b'chayim b'gan Eden, 7 went alive to Gan Eden, Eluhain, one of them is Serach ben Asher. So here we go, we have a lot of Midrashim trying to explain to us why Serach is listed in the Pasuk. That is the source of all of these ideas. She must have been important, that she is one of the 5 sisters that we hear about in all of Torah. One last sister before we get to Moshe, Atar of Miriam, which is of course Elisheva. If you look at source number 12, we hear about Aaron marrying a woman named Elisheva, Vayikach Aaron et Elisheva, Bat Aminadav, and again, it should have stopped there, but it doesn't, Achot Nachshon. She's the sister of Nachshon. So here we have again another woman that's being listed by name, and we hear about her brother, so we hear who she's the sister of. And this makes a lot of sense to us too. Elisheva must have been someone of importance that Aaron chooses to marry her, but it's also possible that Aaron chose to marry her for the connection to someone in her family, which may have been her brother, where we know from source 13, Yehuda Nachshon and Aminadav, that her brother was the head of the tribe of Yehuda. He was the Nasi of Yehuda. He's the one who led the Degel, who led the tribe in the desert, which therefore means he was really leading the Jewish people in some way on their traveling. And we all know the famous Chazal, where the Gemara is trying to see what's so important about Nachshon, Kafat Nachshon ben Aminadav Ayarla Yam Tchil. We all know this Midrash, that possibly we can argue that Nachshon was the one who jumped into the Yamsuf first and then the sea split, and therefore, wow, what yichus, her brother is amazing, she must be amazing, that's why Aaron chooses to marry her. By the end of the day, all of these sisters that we hear about, they certainly have a connection to their brother. We hear small amounts of information, and that's all. But when it comes to Miriam, there is a massive amount of information about Miriam. And that really came to have me question, what am I supposed to learn from Miriam? Is she just the sister of Moshe and Aaron, and therefore by the fact that she's related to 2 such important people, she deserves to be mentioned in the text? Or is it that she herself is someone of significance and someone that we can certainly learn from? So let's start by tracing through some of the stories of Miriam and try to see the picture that we come up with at the end. If you look at source 14, which is not the first time we see Miriam, but to me a very significant source, which we will look at a few times as we go along this year, when it lists her family, v'shem eshes Amram Yocheved bat Levi asher yalda otah lelevi b'mitzrayim v'teled l'Amram et Aaron ve'et Moshe ve'et Miriam achotam. It tells us about the union between Amram and Yocheved, how they have three children, Moshe and Aaron. And to me what's so significant about this pasuk is the last three words. Because normally when we have an important union, we hear about the sons who are important, Moshe and Aaron. But we don't stop there. We mention Miriam, but not only that, we associate her. It's obvious she's the sister. If you have three children, they are brothers and sisters. But for some reason, the pasuk needs to point out, she is Miriam. She is Miriam, the sister of Moshe and Aaron. And the question for us is to understand, what is the significance of that phrase? Is she unique, or is she just the sister? Source 15 is the first time we meet up with Miriam, or we assume that we meet up with Miriam, I should say, which is the very famous story, Vatitatsev Achoto Merachok Ladea Maya Salo. We all know the story. Moshe is put in some sort of teivan, some sort of ark, into the Nile River in hope that he will survive because they're killing all the baby boys and throwing them into the river. And his sister is standing there from a distance, waiting to see what will happen to her brother. That's what we hear about her. Then we know as the story continues, Paro comes in, picks up the teva, and she's trying to figure out what to do with Moshe. She realizes it's a Jewish baby. Comes the sister again, Vatomer Achoto. It's significant. She's the sister. That's how we refer to her. El Beit Paro. She goes to, I'm sorry, to Bat Paro, and she says, "Do you want me to call someone to nurse the child?" She brings in her own mother. What a brave, what in some sense a chutzpah, a little bit, you know, of kind of trying to say to her, "I know that baby's Jewish, and let me, in some sense, you know, connect him back to his own mother." Now, what's interesting here, and to be intellectually honest, you should know, Ibn Ezra is of the opinion that this is not Miriam, okay? Ibn Ezra says, Achoto, yitachin liyot achoto, mimishpachto, it's someone from her family. It's not necessarily Miriam. Why? He says in the footnote, ki lo nizkar shema shel Miriam. It doesn't say Miriam, so therefore, why would we assume it is Miriam? If it was Miriam, it would have said Miriam. But the answer back to this, Ibn Ezra, as all Mefarshim besides this assume it is Miriam, is that if you look through the parak, nobody's name is mentioned. Amram is not called Amram. He's called Ishmi Beit Levi. He's a man from Beit Levi. Yocheved is not mentioned. She's Bat Levi, the daughter of Levi. Nobody has a name in this entire parak. Even Bat Paro is just called the daughter of Paro. We never find out her name. The only person who has a name is Moshe, who's actually given a name in the parak. And by doing that, the parak is emphasizing the significance, which is Moshe and the naming of Moshe. Nobody else's name is important. But therefore, we can argue that since she's the only sister we know of, it's very probable that this is the sister we're talking about. And I would tell you, all Mefarshim, besides this Ibn Ezra, assume that of course this is Miriam. So if this is Miriam, what we start out knowing about her is that she's incredibly brave. You know, she's incredibly brave to be spying and watching her brother. It's a sister who's expecting something to be of this situation. And to go up to the daughter of Paro with the way that she did is obviously something that only somebody who has characteristics that is not, you know, in the background, but somebody who really feels that she needs to do what is right and go out there and risk her own life, that is the qualities we see in Miriam right from the start. We then go to story number 2 of Miriam, which takes us quite a while later, which is in source 16. Already the Jewish people are taken out of Mitzrayim. Already the sea has been split. And comes Moshe and he's singing a shira, he's singing a yashir, as we all know. And here is our pasuk, source 16. Vatikach Miriam hanivya, achot Aharon et hatof biyadav, vatatzenu kol hanashim achareha, betupim ubimacholos. Miriam goes out and she takes some sort of instrument. She leads all the women with singing and dancing. Vatam lahem Miriam, and Miriam responds, Shiru Lashem ki ga'aga asus rachor mavayom, and she's singing a song. So here we have, which is interesting to me, Moshe on the one side, you know, singing some songs with the men, and here we have Miriam on the other side, you know, singing as well. Now what's interesting, if you look at the description of her, is that first of all it says to us she's achot Aaron, she's the sister of Aaron. It does not say she's the sister of Moshe, which I find interesting. Answer simple, right, for number one here, is Aaron is older. We're not going to say Achot Aaron v'Moshe. That's obvious. So we're going to pick one brother. We normally do, if you look through Torah, pick the oldest of the brothers when we're referring back. But I'd like to tell you, we will have two more answers to this question before the shiur is up. But number one, she's referred to as the sister of Aaron. Number two, it is clear here that there's some form of leadership that she possesses. It could be because she's the sister of the two leaders, or it could just be because she herself possesses the same leadership qualities, but she's the one who picks up the instruments and says, come on, women, let's join in, you know, let's sing as well, and she leads them in song. But what's also interesting for me here is that it says that she's Miriam Hanivi'ah. She is Miriam who is a prophetess. She speaks to God. Now, if you look at Source 17, based on this pasuk, it makes sense. She's listed as one of the seven women who have prophecy. Sheven Neviot, Ma Ninhu. There are seven women who've had prophecy. Who are they? Sarah, Miriam, Devorah, Hannah, Abigail, Chultav, Esther. Very impressive women. And Miriam is very obvious. Some of them, it doesn't say in the pasukim that they spoke to God, but Miriam, it's obvious. It says Miriam Hanivi'ah. But what's interesting about Miriam here, even though obviously that gives her prestige that we're saying she spoke to God, and it gives her prestige that she leads the women, what we're missing is, what are we missing? What's the prophecy? Meaning, when did you see Miriam speaking to God? Somewhere between the time, or maybe not even between the time of this story to the last story, but somewhere within this storyline, she speaks to God. But that is not written in the Pesukim. We just are told later, by the way, she spoke to God. We don't know if she speaks to God all the time, versus she's someone who spoke to God one time. Either way, you would be called a Nevi'ah, but that's what we don't know. Chazal don't like when there are blanks in the storyline. They don't like it at all. So therefore, they always try to fill in the blanks. So what are you going to do if you're trying to fill in the blank? What you do is you connect the stories that we know, because that's the only information that we have. So comes Chazal and says, I know by the story in Shemot Tevav, she's a Nevi'ah. I also know that the only thing I've heard about her so far is from Shemot Perek Bet, which is our source 15. Let me put these two stories together and come up with a prophecy. Because I have another question. Question number one, really, is on the first pasuk that I read, what's she waiting for? Why is she standing there watching her brother? What's she waiting for? What is it that she's standing there assuming is going to happen? Now, the obvious answer is she's a sister who's concerned. She's like, I want to see. But maybe if I take my two questions of what did God tell her if she's a prophetess and what is she waiting for, I can come up with a beautiful answer. Comes our Gemara, source 18. Vatikach Miriam Hanivi'ah Achot Aaron. That's our pasuk. Achot Aaron, says the Gemara. Why does it call her the sister of Aaron? V'lo Achot Moshe. Here's our answer number two. Amarav Amram Amarav. Imri La Amarav Nachlin Amarav. So two different versions of who is the source of the statement of Rav. Fine. Rav says, Milameit Shehaita Mitnava Kishehi Achot Aaron. The answer to the question is, when was she Miriam Hanivi'ah? She had one prophecy, and that prophecy was when she was only the sister of Aaron, meaning, who wasn't born yet?
Moshe.
So now I have a time period that I understand when the prophecy occurred. The fact that it says Achot Aaron is to tell me that when she had the prophecy was when she was only the sister of Aaron, not Moshe. And therefore the prophecy must have been before Moshe was born. And therefore probably something to do with Moshe's birth. So what was the prophecy? The Omerit, she said, Atida imi sheteleid ben Shemoshi et Yisrael. Her prophecy was a very simple one. My mother is going to give birth to the savior of the Jewish people. The Kevan shev nolad Moshe. So now Moshe is born, right? And the parents are like, let's see what's going on with this prophecy. Is it real or is it fake? Nitmale kol habayit kula or, the whole house filled with light. Amada viha v'nashka al rosha. Her father came over to her, kissed her head. Amarla and says to her, Biti nitkaima nevuah tayach. Wow, your nevuah came true. Amazing. It's possible the parents didn't realize, you know, sometimes children say things. Is this really a prophecy from God? Are you just making stuff up? You know, you're hopeful that, oh, my mother is going to give birth and we're all going to be okay. A very hopeful person, but is it real? Well, there was a miraculous type of event that made them realize something special about this baby. Her father comes over, gives her a kiss, says, you're right. However, the Kevan Sheitelua Lior, now 3 months go by, they can't hide him anymore, so now they're putting him into the Nile River. In their parents' eyes, he's dead. I mean, there's nothing, he's not the savior. So what does her father say? Amada Viva Tapchal Rasha. He goes over, I don't say he hits her. Pats her on the head. He's like, come on, Amarla, BT, my daughter. Hecha Nevuat Hayach, what happened to your prophecy? It's not coming true. And this is why it says, That's why she was standing there. She wanted to know, I know I had a prophecy, what's going to happen to this baby, because I know this is supposed to be the child who's going to save the Jewish people. In that sense, Chazal makes a beautiful circle, solving the Achot Aharon problem, solving what is the nevuah that she had, and solving the problem of why she's standing there waiting, all with one very beautiful answer. Let's move on to another story of Miriam, source 19. And this, again, through the eyes of Chazal, is about Miriam, as we're about to see. Through the eyes of Pshat, may not be at all. We all know the story of Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim Miyalda Ta'ivriyota Sher Shem HaChat Shifra V'Shem HaSheni Pua. We have two different midwives that, again, realize the ambiguity of the language here. It could be Jewish midwives, or it could be midwives of the Jews, and therefore leaving it open that these women are Egyptians. They're not even Jewish at all. But if we're going to say they're Jewish midwives, one has the name Shifra, one has the name Pua. We all know the story. He says, kill the baby boys before they are born, or as you are delivering them, kill them. And of course, Vatirena Hamialdot et Alokim Velo Asuka Asher Diber Aleim Melech Mitzrayim, they do not kill the babies. And they are, of course, rewarded. Now, in the Pshat, this is two women named Shifra and Pua. Very nice women. Again, are they Jewish? Are they Egyptian? Both readings are possible. But in the eyes of Chazal, this is a problem. Because, you see, Chazal has a principle called conservation of personalities, which is we don't like excess people that we don't know who they are. And therefore, if we don't know who they are, we need to make them somebody that we know. There's two understandings of this principle, to be clear. One is Chazal is actually saying, this is who they are. They are that person. The second understanding is just saying, you can compare them to this other person. They are similar to that person. So since I don't know much about them, I'm going to tell you they're similar to this other person, so now you can know a little bit more. This is something that's done all the time, and I gave you a few very famous examples. Source 20, Keturah. We all know Abraham marries a third wife by the name of Keturah. Comes Chazal and tells us, Ze Hagar. That must have been the second wife, Hagar, because I don't know this Keturah. I don't know who she is. Rashbam, however, tells us, no, Lefi Hapshat, Ein Zu Hagar. According to Pshat, he had a third wife. He met a third woman. There are many women in the world. Avram could have met a third woman. We don't have to necessarily say it is Hagar. This is all part of conservations of personality. Or 21, the Medrash tells us, Pinchas Hu Eliyahu. They're very similar in personality. They both have Kin'ah, Kano, Kanesi, Lashem, I'm zealous. Are they the same person? I don't know. Chazal possibly are saying they are. Source number 22, Lapidot. That is the husband of Devorah. It says, Devorah Eshet Lapidot. We hear nothing about this guy. So within Chazal, he must be Barak. He must be the general. We know a lot about the general, and they hang out a lot, so maybe it makes more sense if they're husband and wife. Source 23, Ifsan. This just happened in Megillas Rus that we just read a few days ago. Ifsan must be Boaz. Why? Because Ifsan is a judge who's from Beit Lechem Yehuda. We know very little about him. Boaz is from Beit Lechem. He's from the time of Judges, and he seems to be someone of significance. So put it together, they must be the same person, because Boaz must be a judge, since he's so important, and we have a Megillah about him. And the only judge we have from Beit Lechem Yehuda is Ifsan, so maybe Ifsan is Boaz. But at the end of the day, let's focus on Shifra and Pua. Source 24. So here's our Gemara. Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim. A lot of people don't know there are two versions in this Gemara. Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim lemialdot ta'ivriyot. Rav and Shmuel. They argue, Rav and Shmuel. Chadamar, one says, Isha ubita, it's a mother and daughter combination. V'chadamar, and the other one says, Kala v'chamuta, it's a mother and daughter-in-law combination. Manda amar isha v'bita, the one who says it's mother and daughter, so it must be Yochevet and Miriam. It's only mother and daughter we know in the Pesukim. The one who says Manda Amar Kalav Chamuta, the one who says it's a mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, so that would be Yocheved and Elisheva. Two different versions in the Gemara, who Shifra and Pua are. Is it Yocheved and Elisheva, or is it Yocheved and Miriam? Rashi takes the first view, which is why that's the view that all of us know. Shifra Zu Yocheved, because she's Mishaperet et Havalad, she improves the baby, she takes care of the baby, and Pua is Miriam, because she soothes them with her way of speaking. Now, if this is Miriam, if, because it is not clear that it is Miriam, but certainly the association of Chazal to this person, Pua, makes sense, because we are highlighting about Miriam that she is brave. We are highlighting about Miriam that she has this sense that her brother is going to be born and is going to be of leadership and saving the Jewish people. It makes sense then to associate her with a woman who won't kill baby boys, right, of the Jewish people. The woman who, because she doesn't kill the baby boys, Moshe is is able to be born, and a woman who obviously is extremely brave and is standing up to the king of Mitzrayim by not doing what he requests. Either it is the same person, and therefore we really see Miriam as the brave and leadership quality, or we're comparing them to each other, telling us that this woman and Miriam are very similar. Almost last but not least, source 26, back to the pasuk I started with, now in context. The next time we hear about Miriam is in Bamidbar Chafvav. In Bamidbar Chafvav, we're listing all the people in terms of army, in terms of service, whether it's in service in the Mishkan or service in an army that's going to take place. And therefore, you would assume, as you should, that it's going to be a list of men and men's names. But comes along, and now look at our pasuk again, that it's Miriam Achotam. Now you have a real question. Why is Miriam being mentioned here at all if it's in a list of people who are doing service to God, which we know women do not do service in the Mishkan, and women certainly do not serve in the army? And the question gets bigger, because if you look at this list, I find a few more women that are in the list. If you look at Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Slafchad, it talks about Slafchad, and of course Vishem Benot Slafchad, and it goes through the names of the daughter of Slafchad. Important women who, because of their story and them going out and saying our father died without any sons, we learn the halacha that women can inherit land in Eretz Yisrael if there are no brothers. And of course, Pasuk Memvav, Vishem Bat Asher, Serach, she's there again, which is why Chazal, I think, really try to find significance for her, because she's not only listed in the list in Bereishit, she's listed here in the list in Bamidbar, which is why we also think she's alive for a really long time, which is kind of crazy. Comes a Barbanel and so beautifully says, Shehaita Isha Chashuva, she must have been a really important woman. Kemosha Lezen is Karada, she's mentioned here, Gam Kein Miriam, so to Miriam as well. So Miriam here is listed in a list that doesn't seem to make sense, but with two other sets of women that are significant women, again making us realize that there's something significant about Miriam. Last but not least, source 28, we hear about the death of Miriam, which you might say is very nice. Of course, we should hear Vatamat Sham, Miriam Vatikaver Sham, she dies and she's buried there. But if you think about it, we hear about very few deaths in Tanakh, very, very few. We hear about Sarah, we hear about Abraham, we hear about Yitzchak, we hear about Yaakov, we hear about Moshe, we hear about Aaron. We don't hear about every other person's death. Look, search the psukim. We don't hear about a lot of people's deaths. We hear about Rachel because it's kind of tragic on the way. Leah, we never hear about Leah dying. Search the psukim, we don't hear about Rivka dying. We don't hear about so many important people dying. The Shvatim, it just says the whole generation died. We don't hear about each one. Miriam, we hear about her death, we hear about her burial. Again, Chazal struggle with why are we giving her significance that we hear about her death. Comes along Chazal and gives us a famous answer. But we always have to understand what's the famous answer coming to answer. I mean, what's the question? The question is, why do we care about Miriam's death? The next pasuk right after she dies, which I gave you, still in source 28, V'lo hayamayim, they're out of water. And that's when we have a whole story of them asking for water and Moshe hitting the rock, a whole problem, right? Rashi says, why is it important to hear about her death? Mikan shekol arim shana hayalahem habe'er b'schus Miriam, to teach us that they had water the whole time, the whole 40 years, because of her. But even if that's the answer of Chazal, I still have a question, which is, what was so great about her that we had water in her honor? And if I take away that answer of Chazal, what's so great about her that I hear about her death? I don't hear about so many people's death, only leaders. So why am I hearing about her? But before I get to answer that question, I know I skipped a story. And the story about Miriam that I skipped is on purpose, because it doesn't fit into any other story that I just told you about, which is the story that's coming up in this week's Parsha, which is why we picked this year for this week. Which is in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Baaloscha, we have the story that comes up in source 29, which is Aaron and Miriam speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe, and a very negative story. And it surprises me, and it confuses me when I read the story, because every other story that I read about Miriam is so positive and so wonderful, and I'm struggling trying to figure out, is she an amazing person? Is she an amazing leader? Or just, but not negative. I have nothing negative about Miriam. And then I get to this story and I'm entirely confused. Now, I can't make this a positive story about Miriam. I will try a little bit. Because in source 29, as I see very clearly, the name Miriam, it's Sarath Kasheleg, she is punished. She gets Sarath, she gets leprosy. There's no way around it to say that Miriam didn't do what the pasuk is telling her that she did. She got Sarath, she got punished. The question, however, is what is going on in the story and how does it fit into the picture of Miriam that I've tried to create for you here? If you look at source 30, we hear what they did. Okay, let's read it together. Vayitzaber Miriam v'Aaron, which is very important that her name comes first, because normally Aaron's name should have come first. So by the fact that her name comes first, it shows us she's really the instigator here. But also, vayitzaber is in feminine form. It's not even in plural form. So clearly it's referring to her. She started here. She's speaking. They spoke together, or she spoke first, and he was listening, whichever one it is, be'em Moshe. About Moshe, Aladota Yishaku Shita Shalakach, about some woman from Cush that he took. Hishaku Shilakach, because he took this woman from Cush. Vayomru, and they say, now that's in plural, and that's about both of them. Harak Ach Moshe Diber Hashem, does God only speak to Moshe? Vahalu Gambanu Diber, doesn't God also speak to us? Vayishma Hashem. Now, I understand that Pasuk Aleph leads to tons of questions. Who is this Ishakushi? When did he marry this Ishakushi? Why do they have a problem with this Ishakushi? Is it Sipor? Is it not Sipor? I get that. But then that turns into a Sipor Shir. And what's interesting about that question, which is really why I could put it to the side, God never responds to that. It really seems like that's just the statement that leads to the second statement, that is the more important statement, which is what God is responding to. And that statement is just disappears. That's why we can never solve, who is this Ishakushi? Because we never hear about her again. We never heard about her before. We never hear about her afterwards. No one responds to that. Nobody even deals with it. So I have no idea who this woman is. It could be Zipporah. It could be. Could it be some woman he married earlier that's from Cush? Maybe. Could it be a woman he married right now? Could Moshe have just had a wedding? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know because I don't hear about her. But the fact that I don't hear about her makes me feel that that's not what's important about this story. What's important about the story is the second statement. And think about the second statement for a second. And that's what God responds to. Does God only speak to Moshe? Doesn't he speak to us too? Stop for a second. What is one thing we all know about Moshe? God speaks to Moshe all the time. God speaks to Moshe panim al panim, face to face, like a friend. What type of ridiculous statement is that? Think about it. This is Aaron and Miriam. This is the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard in my life. Am I also like Moshe? No, you're not. Why would you even think that? Think about it for a second. Either they were completely delusional, which I can't believe is true, that Aaron and Miriam would be delusional about this issue, or I have to really try to think again about what they are saying in this statement, because it doesn't make any sense. Aren't I just like Moshe? No, you're not just like Moshe, and we all know you're not like Moshe, so how could you say that for a moment? So what you have to do in order to understand this statement is actually think about it through their perspective. From God's perspective, are they like Moshe? Obviously not, and God's going to say so. From our perspective, reading the Torah, are they anything like Moshe? No, because we have the understanding behind reading Psukim that tells us over and over again that Moshe is special and Moshe is different. Lokam Yisrael, Ka Moshe, oh, no one's like Moshe. We have those Psukim. Aaron and Miriam did not have those psukim, okay? So what you have to understand is, in order for them to make a statement of that sort, they had to believe, to some extent, that that was true. In their mind, they had to think that they were, in some sense, equal to Moshe. So if I take Aaron for a minute, I can understand that a little bit. I could say from Aaron's perspective, I get it. If you look at source 31, we all know that Moshe, or Chazal believes, that Aaron had some sort of leadership position before Moshe came to Mitzrayim. Source 31, Amar Moshe, Ad Shalo Amadati Haya Aaron Achi Mitznabe Lehem Shmanim Shana. For the last 80 years, Aaron has been the prophet, and now you want me to come in and take over? There's an assumption within Chazal, Aaron was the leader. I believe the pshat reason why we think that is very, very simple. Moshe shows up, Aaron takes him, and somehow is able to gather all the Zakenim, all the elders. Really? Could you go into Israel and say, I would like to gather all the Gedolei Hador together right now? Any of them show up? None of them are going to show up. Unless you're someone of prestige, no one's showing up. How did Aaron get all the Zakenim to come together to listen to Moshe and at least for the beginning follow him partially along the way, right? How did he get? He must have had tremendous respect of all of those people, therefore showing us he probably was some form of leader, either the leader or somebody that was leading during that time, or else it doesn't make any sense. So within pshat, we can assume Aaron had some form of leadership. Then source 32, when Moshe comes in, he becomes his sidekick. He doesn't become a nobody. He's number two. God says it to him. First of all, Aaron's going to come. He's going to be so happy. Look where I bolded at the end. He will be your mouth. You will be the leader. You're going to go together. You're going to work this all together. And we all know they went together to talk to the Jewish people. They went together to talk to Paro. Aaron even performed the first number of Makod, the first number of plagues. Aaron had a position here that was really quite high. Then, before this week's Parsha coming, Source 33, much earlier, in Shmos, Aaron is chosen to be the Kohen Gadol. He says, HaKarev alech et Aaron achicha and his children, Lekano li Aaron, Nadav, Aviyu, Elazar, Itamar, Bnei Aaron, he's going to be the Kohen Gadol, they're going to be the Kohanim. Aaron gets a very prestigious position. And he is the one who is the face of getting forgiveness on Yom Kippur. He is the one who does the Avodah. Aaron has a very prestigious position. So I can understand for a minute how Aaron could say, look at all that I have. Look at what I do for the Jewish people. Why does Moshe think he's better than me? We're kind of on equal ground. I could see how he could have that illusion for a few moments in time and make that statement. How could Miriam make that statement? How? It doesn't make any sense. Why would she ever say that in a million years unless she also had some sort of leadership position? She also was somebody of prestige, of leadership, of value, that she could also make that mistake in that moment in time and say, Amittai is good as Moshe. It can't be God spoke to her once, never spoke to her again, and since then she's been doing nothing. It can't be, because how could somebody, would I ever get up and say, maybe I'm like Moshe. I'm not like Moshe. I know I'm not like Moshe. How could she ever say that unless it was partially true in her reality? Let me try to prove this to you through your psukim, which is that the leadership of Moshe and Aaron, which is certainly Moshe on the top and then Aaron beneath him, was not a duo, but it was a trio. It was Moshe, it was Aaron, and it was Miriam. Miriam the whole time was part of the leadership team. How do I know that? Number one, source 34 has new significance again. I keep pointing out this pasuk, but I think it's important. When we're listing people who are important here in terms of leadership, in terms of service, it is Aaron, it is Moshe, and it is Miriam Achotam. It is a threesome. There is no reason that she should be mentioned here unless she is of significance. And the three names put together is significant to me. Go back to source 35. It's not going back. Go forward. But it's a source we've read already. When it comes to that story of Miriam Hanaviah, Achot Aaron, who is leading them in song, another answer to why it says Achot Aaron. And I thought of it, and then I saw it in Ramban, and that is like the best feeling in the world, which is, this is a story about the leadership of Miriam of the women and Moshe of the men. Well, if I'm a threesome, who's missing in the pasuk? Aaron. I got to stick Aaron in because Aaron's got to be there too. We are a threesome. Look at Ramban for with me. Achod Aaron, hanachom be'enai, says the Ramban. What I think is the correct answer, says Ramban. Ki mipneisha, who's kerub b'shira Moshe v'Miriam. Because in this story, we're mentioning Miriam, we're mentioning Moshe. V'lo isgar Aaron, but we didn't mention the third. We didn't mention him. Rotzav mehakotzav haskiro. So we got to stick him in because they're a threesome. So I got to have three of them there at all time. So Achod Aaron, I'm going to put her associated with Aaron, not Moshe, because then Aaron will be excluded from the story. Not only that, look at the imagery of what's going to happen in this week's Parsha, source 36. So they make this crazy statement, and God wants to teach them the lesson, but how does he teach it to them? Vayomer Hashem Pitom, God comes to them suddenly, all three of them, El Moshe, Ve'el Aaron, Ve'el Miriam, the emphasis in the psukim to all three at the same time. Se'u Shloshtechem, the three of you, go. Three of you, threesome, go. Elohomoei. Vayitsu shloshtachem. Do you see the repetition in the puzzle? And the three of them, go. And then God calls out just to Aaron and Miriam, Vayitsu shnehem. I'm separate. You're a threesome. I know you feel a threesome. But then I'm going to separate the twosome to say, you're not like your brother. It's the imagery that God's trying to say to them is, because you're always a threesome, you made a mistake. And the mistake was, you feel you're equal to Moshe. You're not. You're a twosome that's attached to the leader, which is Moshe Rabbeinu, and it's something that you need to learn. Also, it makes sense in source 37, the last person you'd think Aaron would turn to help him and his sister, is Moshe. But of course he does, because they're a threesome. So he turns to Moshe, and he says, come on, get rid of this sin that we did, please. And he begs him, and he uses the imagery, if you look at source 37, of coming out of the womb of our mother. What's he saying? We're all three connected. We're from the same mother. We came out of the same womb. Pray for your sister. Let her be healed. And we all know, as we will read in this week's Parsha, he, of course, prays for his sister, and she is healed. We see the threesome imagery in the psukim. But I also see that we see very clearly the leadership of Miriam in the Psukim too, if we look for it. If you look at source 38 with me, when Chazal is quoting those Psukim by her leading the women in Shirah, It's not just that she led the choir. Miriam Haita Morel and Hashem is to teach us that she is the leader of women. How do you get women to get up and start singing? If you're the leader of them, if you're someone that they will look to and say, oh, she's singing and dancing, I will also. She wasn't just Stam, a person sitting on the side. And to me, the imagery of that, of she singing with the women and Moshe singing with the men, just reminds me, takes me to a very famous midrash, Avram Migayeret HaNashim V'Sara Migayeret HaNashim. It just reminds me of that Chazal, of Avram converting the men, Sarah converting the women, kind of like a tag team of the husband and the wife, and here being the tag team of the brother and the sister. But I think we could take it a step further. If you look at Source 39, which is a pasuk we've now read a few times, and compare it to Source 40. Source 40 is discussing a woman who is absolutely a leader, because she is a shofetet. She's one of our judges, and the only woman judge, which is Devorah. And if you look at the language, it's extremely similar. Devorah is also called Isha Nivyah. They're really one of the only two women that are called that besides Huldah later on. And also we have Devorah leading the women, or leading, I would say, Am Yisrael, Vatashar, Devorah, Vibarak, and so on. We have a man and woman duo that are coming together to lead the Jewish people in song. And in here, she's actually the greater leader. She's the judge. He's the one listening to her command. And the parallel between the language of Miriam to Devorah really makes me feel that we're trying to emphasize here a more leadership role to Miriam. Not only that, in Source 41, Chazal believed that who's being referred to here by the word Ephrat is Miriam. If you look at Shmos Rabbah, Zu Miriam. Why do we call Ephrat Miriam? Sheparu v'rabu Yisrael ayad. Very generic, because the Jewish people multiplied because of her. But if you look at Source 42, the word Ephrat means so much more. Shekol nasi v'gadol she'amad b'Yisrael nekra shemo Ephrati. The word Ephrati does not, sometimes it means you're from Shevet Ephraim or you live in Har Ephraim, but often when it doesn't apply either of those two things, it means you are a person of significance. It's a title that we're giving someone, and the most famous person to have that title I gave you in the pasuk right beneath it, David ben Ish Ephrati. And therefore, if we're calling her Ephrat in the world of Chazal, we're saying she's not named Ephrat, she is a person of significance. We're comparing her to David HaMelech. I mean, Chazal really give her so much credit in terms of her leadership. Source 43, Chol Sheva Chazeh Minayin Lo Mishevet Yehuda. How does Yehuda have so much praise coming out of it? Umeheichan Zacha L'chol HaChachma Hazot. How did Yehuda merit to have so much wisdom and so much incredible? And Bezalel, who makes the Mishkan, and Shlomo, we know, is the wisest person. Where did this come from? What's the source of the wisdom? Bizchus Miriam. Shenei Marvayasa and Batim, we'll see, they assume Miriam married someone from Yehuda. We'll get there in a minute. And Miriam is the one who is the one who merited this for the tribe of Yehuda. Miriam Natzlacha Chamash Amida Betzalo Veyatzami Menu David. It is from Miriam that all these people come from. What's the source of all this? Source 44. From the fact that if we assume she was Pua, so the Pasuk says, her reward is Vayas Lahem Batim. They got houses. Rashi tells us, so her bayit was Malchut. Her mother got the house of Kuhuna and Leviah, which came through Aaron and Moshe, and she got Malchut. She got the kingdom, which came from her. And therefore, we see a beautiful threesome picture here, which is the leaders of Am Yisrael, some coming from Moshe, Levi, Aaron gets Kuhuna, and she gets Malchut, which is this threesome coming together. But within the psukim, I want to see it a little bit more, and I think this answer some of the questions we brought up. Number one, in Source 45, she gets saras. This happens all the time, that people in the Jewish nation do something bad and they get put michutz l'machane, outside of the camp. But when it comes to Miriam, v'ha'am lo nasa ahesof Miriam, they didn't move until Miriam came back. Who do you do that for? You don't do that for Joe Schmo, you don't do that for Ploni Almoni, you do that for a leader. You do that for someone who is significant. We're not moving until she comes back. We know she needs to be punished. We will wait throughout that time, and then we will move. To the extent that the Midrash even says, Hashchina haitamam tenet la, God waited for her. That's how important she was. But it answers my other question. Source 46, why does it tell us about her death? So I said to you, what was my question? We only hear about the death of leaders. Well, that makes sense now, because the Pasuk is telling us she was important. She was a leader. We deserve to hear about her death. But it's more than that. Look at the language by her death. Vatamat Sham Miriam. And then we hear about her burial. Keep reading. Aaron dies only a few Pasukim later. Vayamat Aaron Sham. When Moshe dies, Vayamat Sham Moshe. Same language by the three, connecting our trio together. They all die in the Psukim. They all die using the same language. Chazal even extends this to Source 47. Moshe, Aaron, Miriam, Amar of Elazar, Miriam, Nami, Benishika, Meitza. They all die with a kiss of God. They're all equal in that sense, that they all were important enough not just to hear about their death, but in the way that they died. And Chazal, one more time, adding to our trio idea and significance, which I think is spilling out of the Psukim, but these ideas in Chazal are just making it even more beautiful. Source 48. Shlosha Parnasim Tovim Amduli Yisrael. There are three people who were able to give to the Jewish people really important things. Ve'eluhin Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Our trio, once again. Shlosha Matanot Tovot Nitnu Al Yadam. Three presents we got from them. Ve'eluhin Be'er, Anan, and Man. From the fact that we have Miriam, we got a Be'er, we got water. We have Anan, we have protection, that's because of Aaron. Man, we got food because of Moshe. And if you think about it, if we were in the desert and we had protection and we had food, but we didn't have drink, we would die. If we had drink and protection, but no food, we would die. If we had drink and food, but no protection, we would die. We needed all three. They were a threesome, all needed, and that's what this Chazal is capturing. One without the other was not good enough. Of course, Moshe is more important than the rest. God spoke to him in a different way. But we needed all three. They're all important. But I would like to take this one level further. It's even more than this. If you think about it, it's just not a threesome. It's a threesome, but it's a dynasty. Moshe, sadly, we hear nothing about his children. But Aaron, we hear a lot about his children. All of his children become Kohanim. Elazar, his son, becomes the Kohen Gadol. Aaron's grandson, Pinchas, is the one who steps up and kills Zimri and stops a major plague that is going on in the sin of Baal Peor. Aaron's brother-in-law, as we know from the Pasuk, Elisheva is his wife, married to Nachshon, as we read already. Nachshon, someone who led us in the story of Kriyas Yamsuf. Aaron's entire family is leadership. What about Miriam? Well, if you look at Source 49, we don't know from Miriam's family, except that we do know in Chazal's mind who her family is. According to Chazal, I told you, she's Ephrat. So if she is Ephrat, look at Source 49. She is married to Vayikach Lo Kalev, that's Ephrat, and she has a child by the name of Hor, and Hor is a child by the name of Betzalel. Let's just think of the significance of what Chazal just added to our picture. Here is Miriam, who is the sister of Moshe and Aaron, who within herself has a leadership position amongst the women of the Jewish people, and maybe is even an advisor amongst her brother, and certainly is stepping in. She marries Kalev, who, as we know from Source 50, is one of the tribes, one of the two tribes who says good things about Eretz Yisrael. He's the one by Yahas Kalev Etam who steps up first before Yehoshua to quiet everyone and say the land is good, everything is okay. He is also the one who's arguing we can kill the giants, right? That's the whole argument. Can we kill the giants? Can we not kill the giants? And at the end of the day, in Sefer Yehoshua, which I gave you in Source 50, he kills the giants. He goes into his land and he takes down the Bnei Anak, Sheshai, Achiman, and Talmai, the giants. He lives up to his words. This is a fearless character, which is, of course, Kalev. That's her husband. If Kalev is her husband, then Hor is her son. Hor, we know two things about. Source 51, in the war against Amalek, when Yehoshua is fighting and Moshe is on the mountain with his hands up in the air, look at the pasuk. Aaron's on one side, Hor, her son, is on the other side. Hor is part of the leadership team. Not only that, in Shemos Chavdala, the second pasuk in Source 51, when Moshe is going up on Har Sinai and Yehoshua's going part of the way, he says, who's in charge? He named Aaron v'Hor imachem. I'm leaving Aaron and Hor in charge. The problem is Hor disappears in the Psukim. He's gone. We never hear from him again. Who knows what happens? But Chazal, therefore, pick up the pieces. We don't like to leave things open. So according to Chazal, which I gave you here in famous Rashi, Ra'ach Hor ben Achoto, Aaron, what did Aaron see? The pasuk says Aaron saw something. What did he see? He saw his nephew, right? Because if the assumption is, right, Miriam and Aaron are brothers, right? Brother and sister. And this is Miriam's son. So this is his nephew. He saw his nephew, Shaya Mochicham Vaharguhu. He said, don't do Cheta Egel. Don't do it. And they murder Hor. So Aaron, therefore, does a different method and tries to delay them instead of trying to stop them. He sees Hor being murdered. But what does that make Hor? fearless. He stands up to the people and says, don't you dare do Cheta Egel. Who's her grandson, or great-grandson, I should say, because he's the son of Uri, the son of Hor, great-grandson, Bezalel. In Source 52, we know he has Chachma and Tfuna and Das. He has all this knowledge, and he builds the Mishkan. So now look at the family in a different way. Moshe on the top, Aaron and his entire family in leadership of Kahuna, and his son Elazar taking over the Kohen Gadol, and Pinchas, and his brother-in-law Nachshon. And now on the other side, we have Miriam. We have her husband Kalev as part of the leadership team. He leads the tribe of Yehuda in the time of Sefer Yehoshua. Her son, who tries to lead and tries to stand up, and of course her great-grandson building the Mishkan. So you have to ask the question, this is a dynasty of leadership. It's amazing. What made it happen? What made it happen that so many people like that could be in one family? And I think the answer is simple if we go back to the full picture, which is because they acted as family, because they leaned on each other, because they supported each other. Every person has positives about them and negatives about them. But if you stand on your own, you can only go so far because your talents only take you that far that it can. But if you, when you're in trouble, I can't speak, Moshe says, lean on your brother Aaron, right? I'm leading the men, but I'm not necessarily leading the women. Comes along his sister Miriam. We get all the way down. If you think about it, if it wasn't for Miriam, if she was Pua, who stopped them from killing the baby boys, Moshe wouldn't be alive. If it wasn't for Miriam, who stood there waiting for her brother and suggesting to Bat Paro to bring down a Jewish nursemaid who was her mother, maybe Moshe would have turned out differently. If it wasn't Aaron who greeted Moshe and literally took him down by the hand down to Mitzrayim and stood next to him, maybe Moshe wouldn't have been able to do it. Maybe he wouldn't have even agreed to go. And then while he's down there, Aaron's his sidekick, Miriam helps him out along the route, and then think about it. In his first war, after they leave Mitzrayim, he is battling Amalek, which is a scary war for Moshe, because he just took them out of Egypt and God made miracles and miracles, and here we're having a somewhat natural battle, right? We all know it's a miracle because God is letting it based on his hand, but they're fighting down below, and he's got his brother on one side, and he's got his sister's son on the other side. He's got Aaron on one hand, Miriam on the other hand. The three of them take down Amalek. They are a threesome, and it is absolutely beautiful. If you think about it, Moshe only starts having issues when the family starts to break. So we have this week's Parsha, when they speak Lashon Hara about him, and they fix it at the end because Moshe prays, but the next thing we know there's a rebellion against Moshe and we got Parshas Korach. Things start to fall apart and Moshe has to stand up for Aaron in that story. And it's not a surprise to me that in Perek Chaf of Bamidbar Miriam dies, Aaron dies 27 psukim later, and in between her death and his is the big sin of Mei Meriva, the big sin of the Hainarach, whatever happens there, when Aaron is decreed to die, Moshe is decreed to die, all happens after Miriam dies. It's like they fall apart without each other. They're only strong when the three are together. And I think what's so beautiful to kind of close here with our midrash here in Source 54, Chachmas Nashim Banta Beita, wise women build a home. Zu Yocheved, that's their mom. Shehemida Shlosha Sadikim, she has three righteous children. Moshe, Aaron, Miriam, see Chazal constantly, three names, putting them together. Shloshtam, the three of them. Zachul HaShameshes Yisrael, they all merited to serve the Jewish people. Moshe Alaman, Aaron Alaneer Kavo, Miriam Alaba'er, Ushloshtam Hayunivim. And the Medrash, I think, is understood two ways. Each of them individually were amazing. But it's Shloshtam, it's the trio, it's the three of them together leading the Jewish people that took them all the way, that took them to be the most incredible leadership dynasty that we have amongst the Jewish people. And therefore, I think if we come back to Source 55, it's Aaron that Moshe that Miriam Achotam has a whole new meaning. It's not just Aaron and Moshe. Oh, and by the way, they have a sister named Miriam. It is a threesome. It is Aaron and Moshe and the sister Miriam, the sister, the three of them together that save the Jewish nation from Mitzrayim, that take us through the desert and die together at the end. Their dynasty starts together, ends together, and it is because of Miriam as well that they are the incredible leaders that they have. I think we can take away from this an inspiration for Miriam in terms of her ability to not just sit in the sidelines and watch her brothers, but to be part of the trio of leadership of the Jewish people. Thank you. Are there questions? I know it's already 11 o'clock, but are there questions? I can stay a few minutes if not. We're good? I answered them all. Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Thank you. So this is our last program for the year. Looking forward to seeing everybody back after in the fall.
Thank you.
I'm not ready to start thinking about the next step.
My pleasure.
Tom, maybe just remind people to bench.
The bench?
Yeah, I don't know if
Sorry, I totally forgot.
Where did you leave your car?
Just part of the parking lot.
Where?
Yeah. That's where I'm leaving the spot. Okay.
Great.
Okay.
Okay.
Hi, where are you? Oh, I'm coming. Oh, by the way, I super should be. All right, I'm coming up here.
It's interesting that in the sometimes the model is leadership of one, and sometimes it's sometimes leadership is more than
He works with East Worcester. I have to get a job to figure out that too.
I was just thinking that would be nice to
I didn't have my car. I was like, oh, shoot. That's great. Your van works. That's really nice.
Are you keeping yours?
Yeah, I don't care.
Definitely.
Not to be negative.
All right.
Awesome.
Yes. Exactly.
It's going to be
okay. Positive. Exactly. Like, it's
all positive. Good.
Right.
She was. Are they recording?
You know, they should be. Hypothetically, they are.
It's recorded. I don't know.
Did you use it?
Yeah. Well, okay. No, we had already. We knew Aaron. We knew we had Aaron much longer than him.
How do you just stop it? Just hit.
Yeah. I tried to put them while you tore.
So how do
just
you
give it to
did
her?
You stop it, Rebecca?
I didn't stop it. No, I never let anybody.